Rabbi, let's see if we can learn the Mishnah here on Daf Nun Amud Beis. We started the Sugya Bar the other day. Let's continue. The Mishnah now wants to explain that there are many different types of boros, different categories, and the common denominator for all of them is that they have a depth of 10 tvachim, which makes it into a bar hamemis. It has the capacity to kill. So the Mishnah says the following. Hachofer bar b'shus harabim v'nofal esocho shor o chamar. Now what happened to the shor that fell into the bar? Either it got damaged, it broke its leg, or it died. It's chayav. And now the Mishnah goes into detail to explain what is included under bar. Echad hachofer bar. Now there's a whole list of, I think, five different forms or types of boros. I'm going to use the Masifti here to explain, to the best of my understanding, exactly what these five are. First we have bar. Bar is a round digging. Okay, it's got a round lip on it, I guess you'd say. He calls it a chafira agula. Say it again? Are you on the same?
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah, you with me? Okay. The second case he has here is siach. So I guess for lack of a better word, we'll call siach a ditch. I don't know, we'll use it as that term. He says, chafira arucha, it's got a certain length to it, but vitzara, it's very narrow, as opposed to a bar, this pit that's very wide on top. The ditch is considered something that's narrow, and the Gemara is going to go through each case to explain why we need a chiddush in each case. Why would I think you're potter? Then the third case we have is called a ma'ara. Ma'ara is square, that's what he says, and it also has a roof over it. It's something like you'll see up in the old cemeteries, like in Sfat, you'll see these kind of things that have a ceiling over it, which means the air is kind of trapped inside.
It's not a cave.
Well, I wouldn't call it a cave exactly, but if that helps, you call it a cave. Charitzin, he says, are square, but on the other hand, they have no ceiling to it, so there's a little bit more air coming in, because air is going to be critical for our whole sugya, as we'll see, Rav. And then we have finally the fifth case, which is called Ne'itzim. And these are wide on top. They have a very open circle or lip on top. And then they gradually get narrow and narrow on the bottom. And in all these cases, he's chayav for the creation of this bar. Now, what we're going to talk about later on is that charitzin and ne'itzin, the last two cases, really fit into a category of their own. There's a big chiddush that you're chayav for these cases because in these cases, there's a certain width that allows the air to come in. And especially in the case of charitzim, where there's no covering on top, there's no ceiling, then more and more air comes in. And again, we're going to see here that Rav holds that bar is the air in the hevel inside the bar. That's what kills or damages the shard that fell in. The Mishnah says in Cain, Lama Nemar Bar. Why did the Torah specify bar when there are so many different cases here? So the Mishnah answers, Ma bar, just like in the case of bar, sheyesh bo kidei lahamis. A bar means that it has the potential, the capacity of killing a shor that comes into it. And when, at what point is that called a bar, sheyesh bo kidei lahamis? When it has the depth of asara tfachim. Correct? Asara tfachim. And this depth is enough to cause death. And that's your paradigm of a bar. Af kol, so to any other types of subterranean digs or whatever it is. Sheishbo kizei loham. If it has the depth of asara tfachim, is so too yechayev for such types or categories of bar. However, are we saying that if it's less than 10 tefachim, it's not a bar at all? And you're completely exempt? Says the Mishnah, no, that's not so. Hayu p'chusim me'asar tefachim v'nofal socho sharo chamar mes. Umes, if it's less than 10 tefachim deep, and the animal dies in the bar potter. We assume that somehow the death of the shar was caused by something else. He has a note here in the name of the Rimi Lunil, Shem Nafal Shomashar, Vinishpara Raglo Vagamnes. What happens if it was a two-stage process? First the shar broke its leg, and then as time went on it died from its injuries. In such case, he wants to say that he has to pay for the nezek, for the breaking of its leg, but he doesn't have to pay for the death of the shor. So it's interesting that the death of the shor, according to the Rimi Lunil, is comprised of two different elements. And if these two different elements actually emerge bazeh or zeh in a time sequence, then even though we say that the bar, since it's less than 10 tefachim, wouldn't have killed the shor, and therefore the owner of the bar is not chayev for the death of the shor, but nevertheless he's chayev for the nezikin. You know that there's a whole sugya of Reuven, let's say, hits Shimon. I mean, not in the case of bar, I'm just using this as an example. And then Shimon falls to the mishkal, the Torah says in Parashat Mishpat, and then we wait to see if he dies from his injuries. Here too, in the case of a shor, it could be very possible that the shor will eventually die from its injuries. And in such a case, he says that the liability for such a bar would have to be divided up into two elements. In the first stage, the animal was injured by this bar of 9 tefachim, and you'd have to pay for those injuries, even though subsequently the shor died from those injuries. You would not have to pay anything beyond those injuries. And the reason for that is because a bar asara is memis, and a bar tes is eno memis.
But isn't he a treifa when he breaks his leg?
Forget about a treifa. I mean, it's still worth something on the market. I don't know if it's a treifa or not. You know, so we figure out on the market how much would a buyer pay for a shar with which is healthy. How much would he pay for a shar with a broken leg? And the difference is what the Bala bar pays for. That's not the chiddush of the Rimi Lunil. That would be true in any bar of 9 tefachim. But the chiddush of the Rimi Lunil is that eventually the shor died from its injuries. And in that case, I would say for sure this bar was a mamis. Even though it's only 9 tefachim, it has to be a mamis. Because why did the shor die? But the answer is that is the halacha, that a shor, that a bar that's less than 10 tefachim, you're not chayv for misa. So you have to pay the difference between the healthy shor and the damaged shor, but you don't have to pay the full value of the shor, meaning the death of the shor. And then the Mishnah says, "Hayu pchusim yasar tefachim v'nachal esolcho shor chamar umes potur, but in huzak bo chayv." He still remains chayv for nizikin. Why? Because a bar, even if it's less than what? Then 10 tefachim deep, can actually cause a nezek to the shor. Now, what exactly is the minimum size or depth of a bar to cause nezek? So that's a three-way machlokes in the Tosefta, here in the sixth perek of Bava Kamma. Kama shiur lahazik, the Tosefta asks. According to the first day of the Tanakama, it's kol shehu. There is no minimum shear of a bar for hezek. Sumchis omer. Sumchis says it has to have the following dimensions. Shlosha tefachim li omek. It's got to be at least 3 tefachim deep. And it has to have the rochav of arba tefachim. So it's got to be 4 tefachim wide by 3 tefachim deep. Less than that, it's not even a bar hamazik. That's sumchus. And Rabbi Elazar's most fascinating shita, he says it's kimloo shel nofel. It depends on the size of the animal that actually fell into the bar. We can never predict a priority whether when you dig this bar you'll be chayv for nezikin. Again, it's less than 10 tefachim deep. But you're taking a risk, because it could be that if we decide, based on the relationship, the ratio between the bar and its size, and the size of the animal that fell in, then indeed, it works out that that nezek was caused by the bar, yachai. So it's fascinating. On the one hand, we have one extreme sheet of the Tanakhama that says there is no minimum shear of a bar hamazik. On the other extreme, we say that there is no shear for a bar hamazik because it's relative. And in the middle, we have the sheet of sumchus, it's got to be 3x4. Okay, that's just an introduction now to the famous sugya. Now, what we're about to learn here, Rabosai, is the most important sugya of bar. Omar Rav, bar shechayvol of Torah, lehavlo velo lechavoto. This is pretty wild. It's counterintuitive. I always thought that the reason why you chay for a bar is because the animal smacks up against the bar, and the impact of the animal on the bottom of the bar, or maybe even on the sides of the bar, is what either kills the animal or injures the animal. No. Says Rav that you're not chayv for that, for some odd reason. We'll get to that in a second. But why you chayv? What caused the injury or the death of the animal that generates a chiyuv of bar? That's called what? Hevel, the hevel abar. Somehow the air of the bar is not, it's not a very healthy oxygen to breathe. And in the case of the animal, the breathing of that foul kind of oxygen or contaminated oxygen was enough to cause it damage. That's what you're paying for. So the Gemara asks, well, why aren't you paying for the impact of the animal? We're going to see a nafka mina in just a minute. Alma, it seems that according to Rav, kasavar chavata, for the impact of the animal against the inside of the bar, you're not chayev. Why not? And the Gemara says that according to Rav, karka olam hu demazkale. Now what does that mean? So first of all, before we get to karka olam hu demazkale, let's talk about the following question. And this we discussed on Monday, 2 days ago. What happens if I dig a bar in my backyard? Am I chayev for such a bar?
No.
Well, it depends. If I went ahead and I was mafkir, the reshus around the bar, then according to Rabbi Akiva at least, according to Rabbi Shmuel, it's going to be machlokas between Rav and Rav Yosef, if you remember the chart that we created. But certainly according to Rabbi Akiva and Rav Yosef's frame of reference, you're chayev for such a thing. Why? Because as soon as you go ahead and you mafkir the entire area around your bar, the Torah says, Ubal habar yishalem, which means that bilus over the bar is enough to engender a chiyuv bar. If that be the case, then Rav is saying, very simply, you know, now I have no problem with Rav. Obviously the story of Rav is going to get more complicated, but just to start with what would be the first layer, you know, of this bar, and that would be the simplest way of going, is to explain that Rav holds that the reason you're chayv for bar, like Rabbi Akiva, is because Ubal HaBar Yishalim, the Torah says you're chayv because you own the bar. If you own the bar, and the bar is a takola for others, then you have to pay for damages. Says Rav, okay, I'm paying for the takola, but wait a second, where is the bar? If the bar is in Rishus HaRavim, it's not in my backyard, then I have a right to say, I'm the owner of the bar, that I'm not chayv for Rishus HaRabim. Why aren't I chayv for Rishus HaRabim? Because I'm not considered the bailim of the bar. But if that... Oh, are you with me? Now, who could slug me up right away and tell me why what I just said is a bunch of malarkey, you know. I hope I didn't sell you the Brooklyn Bridge here, you know. Because Rav says I'm chayv for what? For Hevel. Where did I dig the bar? There was just a Rabim. Rav doesn't say that I'm only chayv for a bar if I dig the bar in my backyard. But what I told you is not malarkey. I'll tell you why. Because what I want to say is the following. That Rav holds, you're not chayv for chavata. When aren't you chayv for chavata? Chavata means you're chayv for the karka of the bar. Again, I'm not going into detail about what, but the physical impact, you know, says Rav, that's not a machayv of bar. Why? Because that's in Rishus HaRabim. Rav says you are chayav for a bar in Rishus HaRabim, but not the Torah's karka. There's a tour of karka called karka olam izikoso, but you chayav for hevel. But let's say I dig a bar in my backyard. And here, if I'm mafkir again the rishus, then I have no right to claim to the nizak karka olam izikasa, that he was damaged by karka olam because it's my bar. And if I assume that bar b'rishuso is chayav, like Rabbi Akiva, for example, could be Rabbi Shmuel also agrees, then I can't claim, meaning the owner of the bar can't claim karka olam izikasa. Is memela Rav would say he's chayav even for what? Nobody's following me. Did I lose you already? I don't know if I'm making for chavata. Then I'm chay for chavata. Rav says it's a special halacha with regard to chavata that I'm potter for chavata in Rishus HaRabim. Rav is not denying, number one, he's not denying the possibility that I'm chay for a bar b'rishus HaRabim. I certainly am chay for a bar b'rishus HaRabim, but only the Torah is what? Havla. And the Gemini Nafgemini is in a wide bar. We'll get to later on when there's plenty of air and we don't assume the Hevel is dangerous. Number two, Rav doesn't absolutely deny the Chiv of Chavot in bar. Where would Rav accept the Machayev of Chavot in bar? In Rishusa. Those are my 2 points. Yeah, go ahead, Rav.
It just doesn't make sense. How is it that Hevel can break a foot?
Oof, that you'll have to wait a little bit. The Gemara is going to go ahead and say that as a result of the fact that the animal breathed this air, again, I'm not a physicist here, I'm not a biologist, but as a result of the fact that the animal breathed this air, it was not able to catch its balance, and that's why it fell. Now, it fell into the depths of the bar. Again, you have to get, you know, we need a zookeeper here to help us out. But let's wait. In other words, Rabbi, what I suggest is all the slings and arrows, you have to shoot at the Gemara itself. Because again, the Gemara is going to somehow assume that the animal, you know, flying through this bar, again, in my mind, it takes about, you know, a fraction of a second for this all to happen. But the Gemara sees it in slow motion, you know, and the animal is, you know, like just slowly falling down this bar, breathing in the air, and before it gets a chance to catch its balance and stand or land on 4 feet, I guess you'd say, the animal trips because of the hevel. The hevel is what causes the animal to just go. It loses its equilibrium.
Ten tefachim, his head isn't even in the bar.
Well, but ten tefachim is pretty deep. Actually. That's going to be the whole sugya matter. How high is the base haskilah when they threw him off the roof? Okay, Rabosei, let's leave out the biology for just a few moments, because what I'm trying to do is create a conceptual structure to understand what is the machayev of bar. So again, Rabosei, according to Rav, what's the machayev of bar? Hevel. What about Chavata? It depends. If the Chavata was in Rishus HaYachid, it was your Rishus, and I hold that you're chay for bar Rishus because you were mafkir the area around your bar, which is probably Rabbi Akiva Shita and only Rabbi Akiva Shita, but it might even be the Shita of Rabbi Shmuel. Then even Rav would say the Chavata is a machayev. There's a separate poter in Rishus HaRabim called what? Karka olam hizikoso. Who's going to reject that halach of karka olam hizikoso? Shmuel. Shmuel omar lehavlo vekolshkein lechavoto. Now, on the one hand, I'm very excited about Shmuel because chavoto is like, you know, wake me up in the middle of the night and ask me why you chay for bar, and my intuitive response is, I don't have to be a rocket scientist, is I'm chay mishum chavata. On the other hand, I have 2 minuses against Shmuel. 1 minus is, what's Shmuel going to say about karka olam hizikaso? Is he not impressed with karka olam hizikaso? That's question number one on Shmuel. But then I have a question number two on Shmuel. Shmuel, I would have been a lot more excited. I would have been there cheering from even behind, you know, behind the plate, or if I only had a bleacher seat, I'd be standing up from the bleachers cheering for you, Shmuel. If only you would have said that bar is the machayev of bar is chavata. But notice, that Shmuel, this is very crucial for the sugya, and you can sort of blink and miss this. Shmuel is not denying Rav's premise that there is such a machayev called Hevel. And if, let's say, Chavata was neutralized, how would I neutralize Chavata Rav Osai? What does he put on the bottom of the bar? He puts cushions on the bottom of the bar. So in such a case, I would have thought Shmuel is going to deny the whole parish, the whole machayev of bar. No. Shmuel also says he's chay mishum hevel. The hevel injured the shor. Narfas. Shmuel comes up with a kal vachomer. And Shmuel says, look, Rav, logically, if you're telling me you're chay for hevel, you should certainly be chay for Chavata, notwithstanding again the fact that Chavata is Karka Olam Hizikoso. So Rabosai, what's the basis of this Kal Vachomer? You can start pontificating about, you know, physics and biology and Kol HaKavod Lechem if you want to go down that path. But it doesn't seem to me ki hu zeh that Shmuel has doubts about the biology of Ra. And there is such a thing as the shor losing itself because of the oxygen it breathes and so forth and so on. So what's the kal vachomer then? After all, he dug a bar, he created this awful hevel, which is a very dangerous business. Shmuel doesn't deny it. And yet Shmuel says, well, if you're chai for hevel, kol shkein you're chai for what? For chavoto. So I have here a footnote. And he says the following. Listen to this. He says that Hevel is Eino Machmas Maisov Mamish, right? That's how the Rebbe used to always end his Fabrengen with the word Mamish, right? Nobody knows what I'm talking about here? Right? Mamish is what?
Actual.
No,
Menachem Mendel Schneerson, right? Okay, you didn't know that. Okay, fine. You can't say something. You walked out of Shul, you didn't learn anything today. Okay. The Rebbe used to end, you know, Bekarav Mamsh. That's how he ended every Shmuz. And then the Hasid used to say, Menachem Mendel Schneerson. Says the Tosus Rid, if Hevel is Mazik, and he's Chayev for that, even though it's Eino Machmas Mais of Mamish, El shall yidea chafira garma, chfiraso garma she is asev avir cham umazik, is kolshkein shemaisa chafiraso nechshav legorem karkis habar she yizot inozik bo al yidei chavota mamish. Basically, according to Tosus Rid, what element in Hilchas Nezikin is Shmuel standing upon without spelling it out? What distinction that's so fundamental in Nezikin? All Nezikin depends upon this chiluk between A and B.
Meisengrom.
Excellent, Meisengrom. The old chiluk, Meisengrom. When I was a kid, I hope he's still alive, Rav Halpern had in Bifagan had a whole machon. Does he still exist? I've got his first name right now. Anyway, he wrote a book called Maisa Ugrama Balacha. Probably the most all-encompassing, far-reaching chiluk in all of the world of halacha. It impacts on every single mesecht and shas is Maisa versus Groma. But I never thought that it would come to play here. Says the Tosfos Rid, that's what Shmuel has in mind. Shmuel thinks that the creation of Groma is one step removed from the digging of the bar. But the creation of Chavata is immediate. It is direct. It is a Maisa of Yetziras Chavata Mamish. The Chavata is not some sort of, well, A causes B, because A, it's not a chain reaction. It's Mamish, a direct result of his Chafir. Rabos, there's a lot to think about here. Because one could argue in two different ways. One could argue, Adarabba, even the Chavata is an indirect result. It's also Groma. He didn't take someone's shor and bang him against the walls of the bar. And B, one can even argue that creating Hevel is more of a direct result of his Chafira than Chavata is. I don't know. But as I state, one of the Rishonim wants to say that's the Kal Vachomer of Shmuel. Say Shmuel, the Kol Shkein Chavata V'im Tomar, lechavato omra Torah v'lo lahavlo. Wait a minute. If my kalvachom is based on the premise that Hevel is a kind of a grama, right? I'm following through with this. I'm building a lot on this Tosus Rid. He says, how do you know that that's not so? Maybe it's funny that Rav even didn't bother asking this question. But you see, Rav didn't have a choice. You know, by process of elimination, since Rav eliminated Chavata with the Svar of Kakaol and Izikoso, what are you going to do with the Parashat Bar? If you're not chayv from Chavata, then ipso facto, you can only be chayv for what?
Okay.
Well, he could have
said,
there's no Rabbi,
good,
I see. But let's just understand conceptually, according to Rav, basically, you have no choice but Hevel, correct? Because even if you hold Bar B'Shus as Chayiv, it doesn't mean that Bar B'Shus Arabim is Potter. So Bar B'Shus Arabim, there's no Machayiv of Bala Bar Yishalim, there's only one Machayiv by process of relation according to Rav, and that is what? Hevel. But according to Shmuel, we should be bothered by this fact, since Hevel is only a grama, and that's the underlying kalvachomer of the logic of Shmuel, then maybe you're only chai for chavata. I don't have that process of elimination of Rav. So the Gemara says, Shmuel says the following, HaTorah he'ida al habar va'afilu Mole Sfogim Shaltzemer. It's a very strange kind of analysis here, but you know, we have something called a stoma. You know, as I always say, something that's unqualified. Shmuel says, well, if the Torah says Yechai from Bar, the Torah doesn't say any, the Torah doesn't qualify to say, well, what's on the bottom of the bar? In order to establish that a bar is always, absolutely, without exception, chayav mishum bar, if that's what the Torah is saying, you're going to have to assume hevel. Because chavata is conditional. Why is chavata conditional? Because in the case of chavata, you have to ask yourself whether the bar has some sort of cushion. Now you may ask, well, wait a minute, who's talking about cushions? You know, like, why would I even entertain the fact that he put a cushion on the bottom of the bar? So I claim there are two answers to this question. One answer, I think, is closer to Metzius, but further away from the text of the Gemara. The other, I think, is further away from Metzius, but closer to the text of the Gemara. So I'm going to try my answer, and you'll slug me up because it doesn't say so in the Gemara, but I would have said the following. Why does a person dig a bar in the middle of Rosh Hashanah? What is he, crazy? Are we talking about a lunatic? So back in the day, again, this is not relevant in contemporary life, they used to dig boros in Rosh Hashanah for what purpose?
Water.
For water. You had to collect water. We have more sophisticated ways of collecting water, right? We have water in the faucets, right? You know the famous story about Lawrence of Arabia. You know, the first time he was in society, so he stayed in a hotel, and he was looking for the water source, so they told him to turn on the faucet. So after he left the hotel, the management came in and there were no faucets left. He thought that in order to get water, all you have to do is turn a faucet. So he took the faucets. Okay. This is, nobody laughed at that, so that was a dud. In any event, they say it's a true story, so I don't, even if you didn't laugh at it, but so the guy digs a bar. Now, let's say he dug the bar very close to his Rishus HaYochid. Why would he dig it close to his Rishus HaYochid? So he can have access to the water. He doesn't want to have to, you know, go out in his pajamas in the middle of the night, you know, to the middle of Rishus HaRabim. He hasn't there. So that you're not allowed to do. We discussed the case where he dedicates, he donates his cistern of water for the Rabim. And that was the case of Nechunya, for those who were with me, Alan, you'll remember, you know, he's a big tzaddik Nechunya, and that's why Reblas Mendoza knew that when Nechunya's daughter fell into a bar, that she would definitely be saved. Because Nechunya would dig boros, and then he would dedicate them for the rabbin. He would be machneh to the rabbin. So I'm just thinking to myself, your average bar, the way I'm suggesting it, is it empty or is it not empty? But again, what was the purpose of digging the bar?
When you dig it.
No, obviously, it's, you know, for that moment in time, it's empty. I'm not denying that. But if I look out at all the boros, you know, floating around with Shitzer Rabin back in the day, they weren't dug yesterday or 5 minutes ago. What's the assumption? It's got something inside of it. That's why they dug the bar in there.
Dedicated the whole part to it.
Do you follow what I'm saying? So the fact that there could be an argument that the Torah should have qualified this, that the bar is empty, and that's why Yechai Fachavata, there's nothing to cushion, that is a strong argument, the Metzius, because the Metzius of your average Joe bar, if there's such a thing, back in the day, was that there was something to cushion the fall. But although I think it's a pretty good shot, it doesn't fit into the language of the Gemara. Because the Gemara says, Kigon shu mole sfogim shel tzemach. He's got some sort of cushion there in the bottom of the bar. What are those cushions called? Sfogim shel tzemach. Now, sfogim shel tzemach is going to neutralize what factor? Chavata, but not Havla. So therefore, since the Gemara, the Torah itself said that you're always chayef for bar, so that makes sense if you hold Hevel. But on the other hand, if you hold Chavata, then it's kind of conditional. And why? It depends on whether or not this Sfogim shall tzemer.
Why?
Could you say that the tzemer was meant to actually, what's the word?
To break the fall. Is that what you mean? No?
No, to stop the Hevel.
Then I'm in trouble. If you're assuming that the Sfogim Shel Tzemer will neutralize the Hevel factor, then I honestly don't know how to learn this Gemara.
It depends on what you're saying. The Sfogim the Tzemer made it less than 10 Tfachim.
He says on the bottom here, She Sfogim Shel Tzemer Monim Esachavota. Monim with an ayin, right? Yeah, Monim, they prevent the...
Yeah, but
so I don't know. There's a lot of mitzvahs here, which I don't know. You're saying that somehow the Sfogim Shel Tzemer would neutralize the Hevel. I don't know.
Hevel comes up from the lower, right? Putting it up,
I don't know exactly.
It's considered a bar.
But that's just going to confuse me, so I'd rather not think about that. You know, I have enough on my plate here without the...
It's considered a bar, even though if it has the cushions. The whole question is it going to do damage or not? A guy digs a bar and he doesn't want to, he wants to prevent as much.
Right.
So he puts cushions in there so people don't.
So why is he chayav? Again, you know, you could argue with the premise of Shmuel, but Shmuel says that every bar is chayav, period. Even if he put the Sfogim Shel
Tzemer. He's only chayav if there's a nezek.
Obviously. Yeah, no, that's for sure.
There'll be less of a nezek. That's why he does
it.
Oh, you're saying there'll be less of a nezek, but there will be some nezek? Is that
there may. He hopes there won't be a nezek. And he's doing whatever. Today we put a fence around it.
Rabbi, I lost you. I just answer me yes or no. If he puts the Sfogim Shel Tzemer on the bottom of the bar, is there going to be chavot or not? I give you only two choices. Don't give me a middle of the road. You gave me the middle of the road. I was hoping for an either or answer. You know.
No, because you can't. It depends on the nezek that will occur.
If someone does his due diligence, put Sfogim, could we say that he's fatal legami even if you broke your neck? Because I did what I had to do. I'm not chayav anymore. I took the, in which case I'm only chayav because of Hevel.
That's the best I can do here. You know,
but everybody holds Hevel.
No, the only thing that bothers me here is why did Shmuel assume that the Torah Ke'ilu had to take into consideration this point? Maybe Rabbi Sachowitz is saying, well, the Torah had to take that in consideration because that's what people do with the bar. They're not stupid enough to just leave the bar without any flimsy, at least protection.
I don't think Shmuel holds Hevel b'chlal.
Wait a minute, no.
I read the Gemara differently.
Then you're going to have a lot of trouble as we go along.
According to you, Rav, who says Hevel, I don't hold that at all. But Kosher came, Rav, you have to hold by.
You mean Letamech, you say.
Letamech, you have to hold by.
But Rabbi, you hold,
he doesn't hold himself.
Hold on to that finish as we go along, because you're going to have to defend yourself over and over again as we go through the
sugya. I'm sure I'm wrong.
I don't know. No, I just don't know how far advanced you are in the sugya. When I stand here, here or sit here in front of this group. I have no clue whatsoever. That was true for Brachas too. But in Brachas I had a little bit of a feeling, you know. I knew that some of the Chevra were preparing before. And here in Bava Kamma, I don't, you know, this is an experiment. I don't know if anybody's oriented in this. I mean, Zev, you've gone through these sugyas how many different times? 4 times, right? Well, no, no, you're only 21, so you couldn't have gone a 4th time. So, he's a big tough, you know, so he's gone through this many times. Okay. Wait, just a second. So the Gemara asks, my Beinayu. Again, Rabbi Sachtowitz, my Beinayu means the following. Since Rabbi Yochanan, since Shmuel agrees to what?
Hevel.
So why does he have to add Chavada? You're only asking a theoretical question. What caused the animal to trip and fall? Was it the Hevel? Was it the Chavata? Who cares? If you chai for Hevel, again, you don't have to agree with me, but the way I understand it, that you, Shmuel, agree that you chai for what? For Hevel. So why do you have to hack me a Chinese say about Chavata, my nafkimina? Iko di beinayu, di avad gova. Listen to this beautiful shtickle Torah of the Gemara. The Gemara wants to know what happens if a person is responsible for creating a hill, I don't know what ramp. You call it, a tail,
a ramp,
something that's high up above the ground. How many tefachim is it going to be if you fall off that high point, that tail?
Ten
tefachim, right? If you learn Masechta Shabbos, you'll know that a Rishus HaYachid is a tail gavoa or a tefachim. Again, I don't know exactly how you translate it to English, or a tail, maybe a heap, maybe a hill, I don't know, if it's a man-made hill, you know, kind of thing. So the animal climbs up the Asarat Tefachim of this tail, and then slips and falls, boom, goes all the way down, breaks a leg. What caused the breaking of the leg?
Not Hevel.
There ain't no Hevel. This is a beautiful chat with the Gemara. I get such geschmack at it. There is no Hevel over here in this case. L'Rav, according to Rav, agova lo machayev. There's an absolute rule that a bar has to be subterranean. It cannot be a tail because there is no element of what? Of Havla. U'lishmuel agova nami machayev. He's not only chayev for what? For chavata. I'm sorry, he's not only chay for what? For Havla, but he's also chayev for Chavata, i.e. for Gova. Wow. I mean, you could see, Rabosai, how Shmuel is really expanding the scope of bar. Fascinating. When I intuitively you ask me what a bar is, I think of a pit, a ditch. I never thought of a tail as a bar. My time of the Rav. Okay. Now this is interesting. The Gemara says my time of the Rav. On the one hand, the good news is that Rav sounds counterintuitive. And that therefore my time of the Gemara wants to know what's the reason for Rav. But on the other hand, the Gemara is a little bit confusing to me because we just finished saying that Rav is based on the Svara of Karka Olam Hudamaskile. So what do you mean, my time of the Rav? You know, you're going backwards. You've already revealed and established the time of Rav. So why are you asking my time of the Rav?
You created the time of Karka Olam.
Obviously, the Gemara is not comfortable with the Svara of Karka Olam Hudamaskile, meaning could be that after you derive the p'tur of Chavata, then you could talk to me about what the getter is. You know, why Chavata, not a philosophical why, but because I can never maybe explain this philosophically, but give me some sort of getter as to when and in what circumstances you're potter from Chavata. And he says, you're potter from Chavata in Karka Olam Hizikos. But what's the basis for? Why come up with this svar? That's going to be mafkia achiv bar in chavata. The amar kra. Now I'm going to read the whole pasuk, but the main word is the word v'nafal. That's written in your gemara. But the whole pasuk reads the following: ki yiftach ish bar o ki yichri ish bar v'lo yichaseru v'nafal shama shar o chamor. Okay. Now, here's the question. When the shar falls down, the shar is walking on the ground, right? Before it falls into the bar. So it's got 4 feet on the ground. the face of an animal, as opposed to the face of a human being, right, looks downward. What we would call face down. So is it fair to assume, again, I'm just trying to defend Rav here against Shmuel, that when the animal falls, it falls face down? Is that fair to assume? I mean, there's another possibility. The animal tripped, flew, you know, did some somersaults in the air and fell on its back. Okay. You know, Shmuel's going to insist that that's also included in the fila. But I just want to give you, you know, I want to give Rav first dibs over here. You know, let's give him... You know, let's give him the platform. And Rav says that the assumption of the nafal is that if the animal is walking, it's going to fall downwards, correct? And that's called what? Ashiyipol derech nefila. So if the face of the animal is downward, by face down towards the bar, then what is the animal going to be breathing as it goes down? It's going to be hevel. On the other hand, l'shmuel v'nafal kol du'mash, it doesn't matter how the Torah doesn't specify how it fell. You want to say, well, maybe the average or the majority of cases when an animal falls, it falls face down. Says Shmuel, I don't see that in the pasuk. The pasuk says v'nafal, and v'nafal could be in general. Now Shmuel assumes that if the animal falls backwards or trips and then falls with its face up, it's not breathing the foul air, although at some point it might be. But the first thing that's going to impact on the animal, if it's going backwards, is going to be what? Chavata. Say Shmuel, nafin nafal koldu mashma, which means that the injury of the animal is caused not by the hevel, if you generalize the nafal, but rather by the chavata itself. Yeah, Shalom, you wanted to say something before? I'm sorry, I didn't... Okay, Tnan. Let's go back to that Mishnah. The Mishnah itself would seem to be explicitly supportive of Shmuel against Rav. Tnan, the Mishnah says that in Kelama Nemar Bar, the Mishnah itself asked this naive question, why did the Torah have to mention Bar? And the Mishnah answered, Ma Bar Sheyesh Bo Kedei Lahamis, Asor Tfachim. Right, the Bar is deep, 10 tfachim, and it has enough depth to kill, in this case, the shar, right? Is af kol sheyesh bo kidei lahamis, anything, even if it's not exactly a bar, it's not a pit, it's a ditch, it's squared off, you know, it's some sort of vault shape or whatever it is asar tfachim. If it has asar tfachim, then it fits the paradigm of a bar amemis, and therefore yechayev. I understand this whole discussion back and forth in the Mishnah. You know, the Mishnah has its, you know, it's the Mishnah's talking to itself with the Shakavatari. Af kol. Let's go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says af kol. There's a chiddush here. La suye. What is it coming to add here? Gova. Meaning, what was the breakthrough of Shmuel? After all, every case that the animal falls down, l'chori, you could be chayef for hevel. So if you're chayef for hevel anyway, again, you have to know if the animal's on its back or it's going forward, but leave that on the side. If the animal's going to be injured or killed by hevel, then even according to Shmuel, you're chayef. Correct? So what was the big breakthrough of Shmuel? Chavata nami, you're also chayef for chavata. The answer is gova. Oh, now I understand why the Mishnah is going through this whole discussion about why the Torah had to say bar. The Torah wanted to tell me bar as a paradigm of what? Of chavata. Right? That's what he's learning, Shmuel. El Rav, af kol lasuye mai. If you're always going to be chayef for hevel, and almost always for hevel, there's no chiyuv for gova, because that's exclusively chavata, and Rav doesn't recognize the bar is chayuv for chavata. So why do we need, and why did the Tana need to come up with af kol? You know, that we go beyond bar. I mean, all these other cases fit into bar, because in every case that we have in the Mishnah, there's hevel. Shmuel would say the af kol is a remez, and this is true in general Mishnayos, that you know, when the Mishnah adds the word kol, it's coming to teach you something that's not in the Mishnah, and that's the case of gova. But according to Rav, what's it called? Lasuye charitzim uneitzim. The chiddush of charitzim uneitzim is that they too have hevel, even though you'll say to me, but that 10 tefachim deep, of course they have hevel. No, 10 tefachim deep is not enough. We need also to have a narrow kind of opening. Why is it necessary to have both a deep depth so that the animal, right, falls a significant amount and breathes a lot of this foul air? But we also have to know that this ditch is very narrow. Why do we have to know that the ditch is narrow? What happens when we expand the width of the bar, Rabosai? We add a lot of healthy air that circulates into the bar. And the chiddush is that charitzim and neitzim, even though they have a wide opening, and we're going to see in each case as the Gemara goes through it, why the maskana of the Mishnah is that afal pichein yochayev for hevel. So the Gemara asks, charitzim uneitzim behejik tonili. Now wait a second. You want to tell me that the call in the Mishnah is coming to include charitzim and neitzim? Well, the Mishnah itself gives you a list of five cases. Says the Gemara, you have to sort of restructure, you know, the sequence in the Mishnah is a little bit misleading. The Gemara says, tani v'adam mefarash. In other words, it works like this. First, the Mishnah gives you the maskana. It gives you the bottom line. These are the five cases of bar for which you chayev. Now the Mishnah reverts back in a reversal to basics. So how do we know that you chayev for all these five cases? And the answer is because we're going to ask the following question. Why did the Torah have to specify bar? The Torah could have specified anything else. And the answer is, that's what the Mishnah wants to teach you, that from the fact that the Torah chose bar, it means that bar is going to be your paradigm. Bar is going to be a kind of an opening that has, because of its measures, its dimensions, it has enough air, but not too much air. It has enough air to create what? Hevel. And then we understand Lamafreya at the beginning of the Mishnah. So if you look at the Mishnah says, Echad hachofer bar siach ma'ara charitzin uneitzim. But then the Mishnah goes back to basics. Okay, you gave me a list, but where does it come from? The answer is, why did the Torah have to specify bar? Bar has these dimensions.
But then it says FOP. Even when it's wide, is it?
Even though it's wide, you're still chayav.
So why?
Why yichayv? So that's going to be the question of dimensions here. How wide is wide? It can't be too wide. For example, if let's say I were to dig, what's it called now? Oh, I'm blanking out. Near Yosemite Park, what's it called? That
Grand Canyon.
Grand Canyon. Oh. Or the Machtesh Rimon, right? If I were the original digger of the Machtesh Rimon, I would not be chayv for bar, according to Rav. Why? Because there's so much air coming in, it's too wide. There's so much air circulation, there's no hevel. The air down in the bottom of the machtesh is just as healthy as the air on the top of the machtesh.
Is that true?
You know, I don't know if that's true. I'm just giving you...
No, I don't mean that. I'm saying, is there any reason to assume that you still wouldn't be chayev according to
Sure. The Gemara's going to go through each one of these cases and show you it's wide but not too wide. And we're going to set up, you know, the Aruch is going to have his shear, it's got to be that the omek is equal to, but not greater than the width. And other Rishonim are going to say, well, if it's equal to the width, if it's 10 tefachim deep and 10 tefachim wide, then it's not hevel and it's not a bar. It's going to have to be that the width is less than, but not equal to, the depth of the bar. I mean, this is going to be the whole sugya that we want to get. Okay, then? Vahani kula diktani lamali. Now the Mishnah gives us a list of five different cases, and the question is, why do I need all five cases? What's the chiddush in each case? Tzricha, the itana bar. So I both say the next piece of Gemara here, I'm going to fly through. I'll tell you why, because there's a lot of physics here which I don't exactly understand. So I'm going to just try to do the best that I can, but I would like to get to the real Lamdish Sugya, which is coming up after this. So bear with me on this upcoming Sugya. The Gemara says the following. Eat on a bar. Again, I'm going to use the word a pit for a lack of a thing. A pit is somewhat somewhat small, but it's round. Okay? So therefore, I would think you're only chayef for bar. Why you only chayef for bar? Because it's got the depth of asara, who the isbe. In other words, we have the element of depth. So the, you know, again, obviously Mitzi is saying that the shor is going to fall down this 10 tefachim immediately. But the Gemara sees it in slow motion, as I call it. So there is a process by which the shor falls down deep, deep, deep into this 10 tefachim deep bar. But havla, there is also hevel. And why is this? Because this pit is small. Small meaning there's not that much air in the pit. However, and that's called mishum, dekatin ukricha. Katin means it's small, so there's not that much air. Kricha means it has a, excuse me, a limited round circle. It's not wide, but rather it's narrow. So it's got both the element of being narrow, which keeps out air, and on the other hand, it has depth, so the animal is flying and breathing for a certain period of time. Avol siach, this is the second case in the Mishnah. Okay, I don't know what to call this. If we call the first one a pit, so just arbitrarily, I'll call this one a ditch, just for lack of a better word. The arich. Here, what we're talking about, it has a certain orech, which is greater than its width. Ema, perhaps, maybe in this case, be'asara, even though it has the depth of asara, less be'havla. It doesn't have enough of a hevel to kill. In other words, somehow it's more spacious, and even though it's long and narrow, but its length is such that it allows more air to go in. There are two sides to this coin of length. You know, on the one hand, if it's not so long, so the animal is not going to be breathing air for that much time. On the other hand, if it's longer and narrower, there's less air coming in. So you could go in both directions. Then the Gemara says, Uba'omek asor les pehav. So I might think that in the case of a siach, even though it's 10 tefachim high, it doesn't have hevel. Therefore the Mishnah, had to mention even what? Siach. The itana siach. Havamina that siach, if it has asorah, hu de isbe havla, it does have an element of hevel, because again, even though it's long, but it's still narrow. So again, the length allows more air to come in, but if it's very narrow, the air is trapped within that very narrow area. Aval ma'ara dimarava, a ma'ara is square on top, and if it's square, it has more of a width, and that's what the Gemara calls ema basara lesbe havla. Doesn't have enough hevel, because again, even though there is a depth of 10 tefachim, so the animal is going to take its time, so to speak, till it gets to the bottom. But nevertheless, since the shape of this ma'ara is what? Is square. Therefore, there's more air that's coming in. However, Abosa, keep in mind that a ma'ara has what on top of it? A roof. So there's a limited amount of air coming in, even though it's square, because it's roofed. And then the Gemara says, "Ve'i tani ma'ara hava bina ma'ara be'asara hu de'isbe havla mishum de mi talala." That's a word we're familiar from Masechta Sukkah. It's got a covering over it. Aval charitzin de lo metalale. Charitzin again are these uncovered squared pits, but since they're uncovered and there's a certain width on top, even though they get narrow on the bottom, but there's a width on top, and they're uncovered, so there's plenty of room for air circulation. Emela, I would think, it would not be able to kill the animal through hevel because it has this element of being open to the air. The itana charitzin, havamina charitzin, be'asaru disbe havlamishun de lespe revicha mili el. There's no air coming in from on top. Charitzim, charitzim we said is uncovered, right? Charitzim is uncovered, and therefore there's air coming in from the top. But nevertheless, why is there hevel? Why is charitzim worse than ne'itzim? Because charitzim are not wider on top. That's what he says. Lesbuhu revicha. Revicha means with.
Right.
Miliel means on top. Tfei mitatoi. Okay, so basically, the structure of these charitzim is such that although it's uncovered and it's squared, but nevertheless it has a width and a depth that match each other. And if they match each other, there is reason to believe that the hevel could be trapped in. Avol ne'itzim, but what's unique about ne'itzim, the revichei mili'el, they're wider on top. In other words, charitzim, the first case is wider on the bottom. So it's hard for the air to come in because it's narrow on top. Flip it around in the case of what? Of ne'itzim, because ne'itzim are what?
Wider on top
of there. Ne'itzim revichel el tfei mitatoi. But once you get down to the bottom, it gets narrow. But again, you know, there's plenty of air coming in because of the width on top. Is ema ba'abasor lesbe havla, even though it's 10 tefachim deep, there is no what? There's no hevel. Kamashmol, and the Mishnah wants to say that no. Any kind of a chafira, as long as it has the omek of 10 tefachim, is considered what? Considered a bar lahavla. And this leads us to the machlokas rishonim as to what the ratio is between the width and the depth, which we'll see in just a minute. Tanan, the Mishnah says, Hayu psuchim mi'asara tefachim. Psuchim, excuse me. What if the depth of the bar is less than asara tefachim? And the Mishnah tells us, Nafal l'socho sharach hamor mes patur, but im huzak bo chayav. In other words, the bar that has the depth of asar tefachim is capable of killing the animal. If it has less than a depth of 10, it's incapable of killing the animal. Now, as far as chavot is concerned, that makes a lot of sense, because the deeper the bar, the greater the hazard as far as killing the animal is concerned. But as far as hevel is concerned, you know, you're telling me that the hevel is dangerous and injurious, is there such a word?
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's less than 10 tefachim, there's a hevel. So what's the difference now between 9 tefachim and 10 tefachim? At this point, the Gemara doesn't think that this should make any bit of a difference from the perspective of hevel, as long as there is a bar that generates hevel and is capable of being mazik, then it's also capable of killing the animal. The Gemara doesn't see that we can quantify, if you will, different levels of the size of the bar relative to the hevel. So that's what the Gemara asks here. When it says in the Mishnah, Nafal l'socho sharach hamor v'mes patur, if this bar is less than 10 tefachim deep, your patur, my timer, lav mishum de lespe chavot. No, this is not a chavot element here in 9 tefachim kidei lahamis. And yet, if it's 9 tefachim, you're telling me that it has enough hevel such that you chayav for the injury of the animal. That means you recognize the existence and the pi'ilut, how should I say, the potential hazardous power of hevel, even if it's 9 tefachim deep. Correct? Even if it's 9 tefachim deep, you're going to be chayav. For what? for Nezikin, and both according to Rav and Shmuel, that means Yechayev even if there are cushions on the bottom, because even Shmuel agrees that Yechayev Mishum Hevel, so there must be enough Hevel even in 9 Tfachim to cause the injury of the animal. And if that be the case, the Gemara says, why do I need the 10th Tefach? Once you have this obnoxious, poisonous, toxic Hevel element, then it'll kill the animal. Lo, says Gemara, that's not so. Mishum de lespe havlo. If it's not 10 Tvachim deep, there is no Hevel. Says Gemara, what are you talking about? Ihochi. Why does the Mishnah say in Huzak Bo Chayov? You can't deny that even in a 9 Tvachim deep bar, there is an element of Hevel. So how can you tell me it's Chayev if the animal injures itself in a bar that's less than 10 Tvachim? Holespe Havla. Amri the Gemara says, we're going to have to say the following. Ein Havla Lemisa V'yesh Havla L'Nezikin. To the same extent that with regard to Chavata, you differentiate between 9 Tvachim and 10 Tvachim. 9 Tvachim is only enough to be Mazik B'Chavata, and 10 Tvachim is necessary to be Mazik B'Misa. So too, there's a parallel track here, a mirror image with regard to Hevel. That 9 Tvachim is enough to damage the animal through Hevel, but in order to create a Hevel that's so powerful and so dangerous to the life of the animal, you need a bar of 10 Tvachim deep.
So Hevel less than 10 Tvachim, it does damage too.
Does damage, but it doesn't kill the animal. That's the Gemara's chiddush. The Gemara initially didn't believe this. The Gemara thought Hevel equals Hevel equals Hevel. You know, if there is Hevel, then it'll damage the animal, it'll kill the animal. The Gemara says, no, yesh Hevel, yesh Hevel. There's one Hevel of a 9 Tvachim deep bar that will damage the animal, but the animal's not going to perish as a result. It'll only perish if the depth of the bar and the hevel that's created is what? Is 10 tfachim. Mm-hmm. That creates a hevel that's so profound that it could cause the death of the animal. Okay, so anybody has to leave, can leave. I just want to try to finish this up. Now we get to the overlap between the Zikin and Treifus. Hahu Torah de Nafal La Risa de Daloy. Rashi says that this shar fell into a cistern of water, which is called in modern Hebrew, not in modern Hebrew, in the Hebrew of the Gemara, Amas Mayim. Now the word Ama means what?
Ama.
How many Tvachim is that?
It's six.
Six Tvachim. Let's assume 6 Tvachim, correct? So we're talking about a cistern that's 6 Tvachim deep. Okay, that was your classical cistern back in the day. It was 6 Tvachim deep. Now the shor falls in, and Shachtei Mare. This was not a good move. The owner of the shor immediately shefted the animal. He didn't wait to see whether this animal would survive the fall. Tarfei Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, I have to consider the possibility, or maybe the probability, the likelihood, that this animal is a trefa, that it injured itself in such a way that it's going to die. Omar Rav Nachman, Ishokil Mare Dahai Torah, Kaba de Kimcha, if this owner of the shar would have had a little bit of patience, he would have grabbed a kav of kemach. Now let's assume a kav of kemach is equal to a bus ride. How much do they charge now? 6 shekel for a bus?
690.
Let's say a kav of kemach, you know, this volume of kemach on the market would get 6.90 shekel. Enough to get on a bus. The Azil, and he would have taken a bus ride, Tana Bei Midrasha, to learn a little bit and rub his shoulders with the Chachamim in the Beis Medrash. He would have saved himself a bomb of money, because Rav Nachman says, I wouldn't have declared the animal as trefa if he would have only asked me. What would I have told him? I would have told him, im shasa meis leis, leave the animal for 24 hours, let's see if it'll survive the fall, and then it's kshera, it's not a trefa. What's a trefa? It'll die
within a year.
And I would have said that if it survived this fall for a full day, it means that whatever injuries it had, it suffered, it was limited injuries. Lo afsade lisora, you wouldn't have lost your shar deshave kamakavi, which is worth many, many kavim. I have a feeling that there's an underlying, like there's a subliminal message being sent over here, that you know what, it's always kedai to ask a shayla. And if you would have asked up front, I would have told you, freeze everything. You hold on to your shechting knife, you know, your chalif, for just 24 hours, and maybe you'll save a shor. Alma kasover av Nachman, yesh chavata bepachos me'asara. This amas mayim is only 6 tfachim deep. And yet, Rav Nachman holds that the animal is going to die. Until I know otherwise, I have to assume, I have to be choshesh, the animal is going to die as a result of this fall. It means that there's chavata here. Eisvei Rava l'Rav Nachman. So Rava asks Rav Nachman, wait a minute, what do we do with that Mishnah? The Mishnah says, Hayu p'chusim me'asar tfachim, and ofal esok shor chamor, mes, potter by time, alav mishun de lespe chavata. So why are you declaring the animal as a treifa when we assume that a bar that's less than yud fachim cannot possibly kill the animal? Says the Gemara, lo. Now we're turning to daf nun aleph from an aleph. What the Mishnah means is not that a bar less than 10 tfachim has no chavata, but rather mishum de less be havla. In other words, Rav Nachman is going to interpret that Mishnah like Rav, that the subject of our bar, Achiv bar the Mishnah, and the Torah's parsha bar, is Hevel, not Chavata. And the distinction between Yudvachim and less than Yudvachim, vis-a-vis Achiv bar in a case of Mis, in a case of Nezikin, is only relevant to Hevel. But as far as Chavata is concerned, if there was no cushion on the bottom of the bar, then Enochinami. This animal, if there's no cushion on the bottom, would die by virtue of the fall, even if the bar is less than 10 tfachim. Again, we have to know what the minimum shear is, but let's say it had 6 tfachim. Ihachi, says the Gemara, huzak bo chayav halespe chavola omale in. He's omale ein hevel abisa yesh hevel in ezekin. Again, the same distinction that we saw before, the Gemara reiterates now. There are two entities of Hevel. There's the entity of Hevel, which is Mazik, and for that, even if it's less than 10 fucking deep, but if you want to know about the Misa, the Hevel that's generated by less than 10 fucking deep is not capable of killing the animal. In any event, we come out now that according to Rav Nachman, the animal will die as a result of Chavata, even in a bar that's 6 tfachim deep. Eisvei, I don't understand. According to you, Rav Nachman, Beis Askila, the Gemara is now assuming that just like an animal would die from Chavata in less than 10 tefachim, so the human being would die if it fell less than 10 tefachim. And yet the Mishnah says in Sanhedrin, Beis Askila, your gavar shtei komos. Now, I don't know exactly what the average size or the average height of a human being is. Can somebody help me with that? 1.60 meters? What is it? I don't know. So you double 1.60 meters and you push him off from the roof. The roof is also at least 1.60 meters. So you're talking about 3 komos of an adam. Hoya gavar shtei komos v'toni alav v'koma shalo. In other words, the kova, there's another koma of the, you know, of the building itself, because you're pushing him off from the roof of the building. Harekan shalosh, we have 3 komos adam. Correct? 3 komos adam, that's like... That's probably like
5 feet.
How many amos would that be? You know, if the average size of a human being is what? Is 2, let's say 3 amos? Does that make sense? So 3, let's say we're talking about 10 amos high. You know, that you reach the ankle of Og Melech HaBoshet over here. But 3, you know, you're talking about 10 amos high. That's a heck of a lot more than 1 amos. That's 10 times the height of 1 amos. Now we're saying that according to Rav Nachman, you can kill a shor with 6 tfachim, that's 1 amma. Isal kedaita chavata bepachos mi'asara lomali kuli hai. You want to kill this guy, right? He was Michal Shabbos b'farhesia with 2 eidim and asra. See, after You have to climb up 10 amos into the thing. Ule taimech navid asara. I mean, so forget about Rav Nachman. Why are you blaming Rav Nachman? Without Rav Nachman, you're telling me it takes 10 tefachim to kill the shark, 10 tefachim to kill the person. Okay, 10 tefachim is still a heck of a lot less than 3 komos Adam. Ella, kid Rav Nachman, we have another statement of Nachman, the name of Rabbah. Rabbah Vua, Omar Krovi, Ahaftal Erech, Kamocha Barar Lechamisi Yafa. It means that he should die quickly. So you push him off from 10 tefachim. I mean, the guy's going to suffer until he dies. So effecting Mari Hachi, Nagbut Fei, so why do you stop at 3 komos? Why not push him off, you know, the Empire State Building? I was about to say something else, but I'm glad I didn't say it, because that's too real. Mishum Dimenavel. Because what happens to the human body when it falls from a very high place? You know, the whole body is just, you know, disintegrate. You know what I'm saying? It's all the pieces and all the limbs are going to fly in all different directions. That's nivel ames. So it's interesting that on the one hand we want to create a quick death. On the other hand, we don't want to completely destroy the human body. That would be nivel. And the after reach kamoch. Again, who's the reach over here? Interesting reach over here. Yeah, so maybe he did tshuva, you know, before they took him out to the misa, right?
There was
vidui
before.
Vidui. He said vidui. So he's reach. So you got to treat him the right way. So how do we find this, you know, this compromise, this middle of the road, in which on the one hand he'll die quickly, but on the other hand he won't this? That's called 3 komos adam. Again, I don't know how they work this out, but that's what they have. Okay, Rabosa, I guess we'll. Does anybody have any koyach to go on? I mean, how far are we for the next Mishnah? Well, if anybody wants to stay, I mean, maybe we can make. You know, we got this far. We might as well, so we can start the new Mishnah. Eisvei, I'll ask you a question. Here's another mitzvah that depends upon the height of a person that might fall, and that's the mitzvah of what? Makeh. The Torah says, Ki yipol hanofel mimenu. So the Brisa says, why did it have to add the word mimenu? Mimenu velo letocho. What does that mean? You could have two dangerous situations on your roof. Number one is somebody might fall off your roof down, and number two, somebody might fall from a high place onto your roof. Imagine if the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is higher than your house. So the Brisa derives from a special mute in the Pasuk Mimenu that in a case where the danger is that somebody might fall from Rosh Hashanah Rabbim onto the roof of your building, of your house, that you don't have to, you're not obligated in the mitzvah of Makeh. Ketzad, what's the case? The distance between the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim and your roof is that the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is 10 tefachim higher than your roof. And now, you got to worry about all the people in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim that might fall onto your roof, and Chas V'Shalom, they could die. So therefore, you should be required to set up what? A Makeh fence that would prevent somebody who's walking in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim from falling onto your roof. The nofel mitocha, they will fall from the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim litocha onto your gag. Potter, you're not chayev in setting a Makeh. You have to worry about a person that you invite into your house. He climbs up to your roof or a member of your family, and Chas V'Shalom could fall down to the ground below, because from your roof down to the ground below is 10 tefachim. But you don't have to worry about the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Let them rack their brains and figure out what to do. Which, by the way, that would support the shita that says that a bar Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is potter, that you're only chayv if you own a bar. That's Rabbi Akiva, according to Rabbi Yosef, if I got that right. And the reason for that is because if it's in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, then the Rabbim have to daiga for themselves. You know, we shift the responsibility over to the Rabbim. They have to know that in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, there'll be pitfalls, there'll be places where you trip. You got to walk carefully. Don't walk at the speed of 5 miles an hour like an Olympic runner. You know, just slow down. You know, Hochei Anamush is what you call it, you know. Is Asar Amuka Mimenu, so even though his gag now is 10 tefachim below the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, Vid Nofel Mitocha L'Tocha, Only in a case where he's got a roof that's higher than the ground below of 10 tefachim, chayav, then he's chayav. But what's clear here? What does the Brisa explicitly say? What is the minimum shear for a makah? How tall, how high is high to require a makah lest somebody fall and die? 10 tefachim, as I state, right? The Mishnah, the Brisa says it over and over again. According to you, Rav Nachman, yesh chavata v'pachas me'asara. Why is it that only if the gag is 10 tefachim above the ground, I have to put up a makah? But if the gag is less than 10 tefachim, and the fall will be less than 10 tefachim, I don't have to put up a makah. According to you, Rav Nachman, the animal will die, or at least the zakshash will die in 6 tefachim. Omar lei. So Rav Nachman answers, shani bias. Whoa, look at this lumdus, Rabosai. I'm so nispoli from lumdus. It's so counterintuitive, you know. This is lumdus on the most abstract level. Shani bias, dechol pachas me'asara. Could you imagine building a house that's less than 10 tefachim high? Okay, if you're learning the Sefer Sukkah, maybe it's okay. You know, I don't know. Is lav bias, who, in brisket terminology, paka leshem bias. The whole condition, the precondition for makah, is kisivne bias chadash, and v'yasiso makah legagech. This is not does hastenikin bias. Again, the fact that somebody is going to walk on your roof, chas v'shalom, fall off six tefachim and kill himself, that's not your problem. Why? Because state and terror bias, and less than 10 tefachim is not a bias. Pell, Philly plot. Anyone who denies lumpus, I'd like him to explain this gemara. If you're telling me that the reason you're potter in a gag when the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is less than 10 tefachim away from it, it's not called a bias, is hashtanami the havi mibroy asara dalvine tikro maziva demigavoy lo avi asara. Every house has some sort of a floor and it has some sort of what? A ceiling. If it has both a floor and the ceiling, then the airspace inside the house is not 10 tefachim. So why does the Braisa say that if the house is 10 tefachim, you have to put up a makah, 10 tefachim is not going to do it for you? So the Gemara answers, Amar lei kigon dechak migavoy. He went inside his house, and he dug another, whatever, tefach, you know, to make up for the diminution, you know, for the subtraction of the tikra, of the maziva, the tikra maziva. So the Gemara says, Ihachi ki lo havi nami mibroy asara. So why does the Braisa say that you're only chayav for makah if I can see 10 tefachim on the outside? Maybe there's less than 10 tefachim on the outside, but maybe he dug on the inside. You might have a situation where, even though me'avroi, which means on the outside it's only 10 tefachim, or I should say it's less than 10 tefachim, nevertheless on the inside it's already 10 tefachim and more. So why did the Tana say that in the case of where the bias is less than 10 tefachim, he's absolutely exempt and exonerated from the chiyuv makah?
The guy's falling outside the house onto the ground. He's not falling inside the house.
Good. Mitch, you're on my side. We're on the same team. Intuitively, this Gemara makes no sense at all. The Gemara is built on three letters in the Torah. And again, I'm telling you, Mitch, there's a sach arbit here. You have to work very hard. You know, if I was giving a drush on this Gemara to an audience, you know, in Shari Shamayim, like I gave a few weeks ago in Toronto, I'd have a real challenge. The Gemara says, Shteitin Pasuk Bias. And the dimensions of the bias here are the absolute precondition, the critical condition to set up a Chiyuv Makah. So Mitch is asking, what difference does it make whether you put the thing and you dug the thing? We're talking about falling from the roof, Ribbono Shel Olam. It's totally irrelevant to the danger element. Says Rav Nachman, says bias. Now you have to define, is it a bias or is it not a bias? And the Braisa is misleading. Because the Braisa says, I look at the house, and I count 9 tefachim. So what if you count 9 tefachim? Therefore, pakalim, shame bias. After all, Rav Nachman, you say it's dangerous even there are only what? 6 tefachim. You should be putting up a marker. Oh no, it all depends on whether there's a bias or not. So why did the Brisa mislead me in this very convoluted, ambiguous language and tell me it depends if this bias is 9 tefachim or not 9, or 10 tefachim? No. You have to ask a different question. Ask whether it's 6 tefachim or not, and it has a shame bias. Once it's 6 tefachim, you're chayv in makir, but only if there's a shame bias. Well, the shame bias has nothing to do with taking a meter and measuring on the outside of the house. The brisa is misleading. It all depends upon the airspace within the house. The airspace of 10 tefachim engenders a shame bias. The nafkamina is whether I'm chayv in mezuzah. The nafkamina will be chayv, the gabi, kohen gadol, you know, has to go into the bias, the base fadroi, the mishnah there at the beginning of Yuma. There are kamav and kamadinim that. What I mentioned? Oh, Hanukkah, I don't know. Maybe it says ner ish who base. Oh, we have to know what constitutes a bias. Halacha, left, right, and center, wants to know what qualifies as a bias. And this has nothing to do with the danger element, because the danger element is engendered by 6 tefachim, and yet the Brisa says 10 tefachim. The answer is, says Rav Nachman, because there's another precondition. It's not enough that it's dangerous and somebody could fall and kill himself. You've got to add another condition. It's got to be a bias, because the Torah says ki sivna bias chodesh vasisamak and lukagecho. Don't tell me to measure the house on the outside. You want to know whether it has a shame bias or not? That depends on the inside. So the Brisa should have given me a clue that I should open the door, look down, and see maybe the guy dug deeper into his house. And by the way, here in this neighborhood, I can tell you it's Meisim B'chol Yom. Because you don't get what's called a heter, you know, to remove the roof in certain cases. So you start digging below the ground. There's a lot of illegal stuff going on below the ground. I'm not faulting anybody, because every inch in this neighborhood costs you a billion shekels. So you might as well dig below the ground and hope that no officer is going to come into your house and snitch on you, you know, to the riyah. Ela, says the Gemara, you know why you're potter from a makeh if the gag is less than 10 tefachim? The answer is that there's no misa through chavata if there's less than 10 tefachim. No, so why did Rav Nachman say that the animal that fell into this bar is a treifa, something treifa? Hainu taima de Rav Nachman, this savar, this is unbelievable, Rabosai, mi kresi de Torah li ara kamayavi arba tefachim, arisa de daloi kamayavi shisa. Ha! Asara ishtakach dechika mechavet me'asara hutu mekom mechavet, says Rav Nachman, from the belly of the animal until the floor is 4 tefachim, and the bar into which it fell, the cistern, is 6 tefachim. Is the body, the belly of the animal, the underside of the animal, is going to fall what? 10 tefachim, 4 plus 6. That's what's going to kill the animal. That's why the animal is a treifa. Ella says the Gemara Masnisa de Katani Ma Barshu Kedela Hamas Asar Tfachim Af Kol Sheishbo Kedela Hamas Asar Tfachim Bishisa Nami Sagya. Why does the Mishnah say in an absolute way that you're only chai for Misa Shar if the bar is 10 Tfachim? After all, if the Shar falls down, you know, straight down, heads down, I guess you'd saw it in the belly, and the belly hits the bottom, then even if the bar was only 6 tefachim, you should be chayav. Amri, so the Gemara says, Mas Nisim, the Mishnah is talking about a case, the Igander Libar. Igander means to wallow, you know, to roll. I'll tell you how I know that, from a Gemara at the end of Ksumas. Igander, it was misgalgil to the bar. So basically, the shar fell backwards. If the shar fell backwards, it has to fall how many tefachim to kill itself? 10 tefachim. If the shar was not rolling, it just simply took a dive and it fell, then even if the bar is only 6 tefachim deep, the shar might indeed die as a result of the fall, and Rav Nachman calls such a shar a treifa. Why? Because we add the 4 tefachim between the ground and the belly, plus the six tefachim deep of the bar. But that's not the case of the Mishnah. The case of the Mishnah is the igander lipar. It fell backwards. How do I know that the word igander means to roll? So I say this only because we're on the verge of the 3 weeks. This is the agadah part of today's shiur. The Gemara at the end of Ksuvah says that when Reb Chiya arrived in Eretz Yisrael for the first time, igander v'ofra, he rolled in the dirt of Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because David HaMelech says, Ki rotzu avodecha savoneha v'safari yechononu. He was so in love with even the offer of Eretz Yisrael that he wanted to wallow in the dust of Eretz Yisrael. He rolled himself in the dust of Eretz Yisrael. And the Ger Rebbe, Zichron Levracha, tells us that he was walking with Rav Kook, the first chief rabbi of Palestine, Rav Avraham Yitzchak Kohen Kook. And the Ger Rebbe, the Imri Emes, was very fond of Rav Kook. And quickly he noticed that there were what's called Pashkevillas. You know what Pashkevillas are? Against Rav Kook, all these big posters. And they were calling him all sorts of terrible names. They called him the Tzioni, you know what I mean? So the Ger Rebbe started moving his back so that he was hoping that Rav Kook wouldn't see the Pashkevillas. It would cause him pain and inimut. So Rav Kook said to the Ger Rebbe, move away, I want to read what they write about me. So they wrote about him, Afra Lefume, the Gemara says about an apikoros, dust into his mouth. Said Rav Kook, Gishmak, it's the dust of Eretz Yisrael, let it go into my mouth.
Stop it. הרב עכשיו יש איזה בבא קמה גם ראשים וראשים וברגלים